You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
There's definitely the downside, right, which is that this is such an egregious injustice. But then there's also the upside, that this is such an egregious injustice that the Me Too movement, which has become, I would say, somewhat dormant in the last year and a half, is now getting refueled.
Today on Sprouts, a response to Bill Cosby's release from prison. In 2018, Bill Cosby was sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison for sexual assault. The Associated Press described his conviction as a turning point in the Me Too movement to hold powerful men accountable for sexual misconduct. On July 1st of 2021, Cosby was released from prison because of a technicality. Today we have reaction and analysis from two specialists. Professor Caroline Heldman speaks with Fran Luck of Joy of Resistance on WBAI in New York. Dr. Heldman has worked extensively in the campus anti-rape movement. And Maddie Tate Smith, who is the Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, speaks with Ursula Rudenberg of KHOI in Ames, Iowa. Please be advised that this program discusses sexual violence. Here is Fran Luck.
How can you enjoy life? Liberty and the pursuit of happiness is, as you move around the world, you always fear rape. And that's in a society that does not take rape seriously and whose courts are slanted to support rapists and not their victims. No women can truly attain life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when this is what is happening, which brings us to the main subject of this show. And that is the shocking and stunning reversal of Bill Cosby's conviction after being accused by 60 different women with a series of similar stories that span many, many years. And we're all still reeling from it. So we will be speaking with Professor Caroline Heldman. She is one of the architects of the anti-rape movement. Do we have Dr. Caroline Heldman on the phone?
Yes, hello.
Hi there. It's really so good to hear your voice. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I am doing well. It's wonderful to speak with you. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm, you know, it's always heavy to get one of these shows together, so I'm still a little breathless, but here we are, and I'm so glad that you could be on the show. You're just the person we want to speak to. Let me introduce you first. Dr. Caroline Heldman is a professor of politics at Occidental College in Los Angeles. She was one of the early architects of the new campus anti-rape movement and has worked to change laws and practices around the issue for two decades. More recently, she led the effort to abolish the time limit on prosecuting rape in California. And Caroline, I will add that I know that you were also at the trial of Bill Cosby in 2018. I actually saw pictures of you in the New York Times standing with survivors outside of that trial. Am I correct in that?
Yes. Indeed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you really had both feet in that. Wow. So let's start at the beginning here. This news came as an incredible shock to just about everybody who heard about it, who had followed that trial. I myself had a moment of disassociation, i.e. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And many, many, many other women and perhaps men also reacted that way. Let's talk about what happened. What is the nature of the reversal of this conviction?
So the ruling itself was a technicality that had nothing to do with his guilt or innocence. I mean, Bill Cosby was found guilty by a jury of his peers in 2018, but the Supreme Court overturned the conviction for two reasons. The first is they say that he made a deal with a prosecutor, Bruce Castor, that he would not be criminally charged, and as a result was more forthcoming in a deposition that he gave after making that deal. And I will say it's a suspicious deal because in the state of Pennsylvania, it's supposed to be signed off by a judge and have a case number. None of that happened. So technically, it wasn't an official deal. The second part of the technicality was five prior bad act witnesses were put on the stand, meaning other women that Bill Cosby had raped were put on the stand in order to show a pattern of behavior. And the court found that five was too many. I'm not really entirely sure what the appropriate number of previous rape survivors would have been, but suffice it to say, the Supreme Court overturned his conviction on a technicality. But they did not rule on his innocence or guilt. I think 64 public survivors all telling the same story across three decades, not knowing one another, is probably proof enough of his guilt.
So let's now talk about what happened when the news hit, because I know you, of course, are very involved in this. And you know other women who are, because you've been in touch with the survivors. How was this news taken? What was the what were the responses?
It was an absolute gut punch. I'm on a few, you know, survivor text chains, Cosby Weinstein, Facebook private groups, right, where we're communicating. And we saw this coming. Those of us who listened to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court go after the prosecution back in December, they were so unprofessional in their interrogation of the prosecution. At one point, the Chief Justice stepped out for 10 minutes inexplicably and came back. I mean, they were openly hostile. So anyone who watched that happen knew what was coming. The question was when. And I will say every survivor I've spoken with is just devastated that this could happen given the mountain of evidence against this man.
Right. And as we said in our news story, we uncovered in our news story, many, many women are feeling, well, what is the point of coming forward? The odds were already stacked against you with like a 1% conviction rate for rape cases. You know, so it's not your own word is not good enough. Four women's word is not good enough. 10 women's word is not good enough. Okay, we had 60 women here. That should be good enough. And then that wasn't good enough. So there is a real fear of this chilling and pushing back the progress that was made by the Me Too movement, encouraging so many women to step forward and tell their stories.
Yeah, I've long told survivors that I work with that they are the fodder on the front lines, that very little, you know, if you look at social movements throughout history, very little shifts quickly, and the early whistleblowers are going to get it, right? And so, and expecting justice is not something that survivors who are part of an early wave of a social movement can expect. I think that there's definitely the downside, right, which is that this is such an egregious injustice. But then there's also the upside, that this is such an egregious injustice that the Me Too movement, which has become, I would say, somewhat dormant in the last year and a half, is now getting refueled because, as you pointed out, 1%, right, of rapists get convicted. You know, fewer than 2 in 100 will spend a day inside a jail cell. It's the stats are remarkable, and I definitely think that it's a chilling message for survivors. This particular case, because of its symbolic nature, is the first Me Too case. I think it even goes beyond that. It signals that girls and women just don't matter, right, in our society. It goes beyond survivors, where you have 64 public survivors and a very high-profile case, and he's still not held accountable. And what message is that sending to boys and men?
of why does this keep happening in rape cases?
At the end of the day, we say as a culture that we think rape is a problem, it's a crime, it's a felony, right? But if you look at what we actually do in terms of our laws, our legal system is not set up to hold rapists accountable. And we know this because 1% are prosecuted. If we had a 1% prosecution, and now I sound like I'm pro-prosecution and lock them up, I think it's more complicated than that. But suffice it to say that if we had a 1% prosecution, effective prosecution rate for other crimes, like carjacking or murder, I mean, we would be up in arms about this. I think it really just signals how ingrained women's second-class status is in our culture. And it's rape culture, right, where we don't actually take rape seriously as a crime, even though we give it lip service on the books. The laws don't actually hold rapists accountable. And whatever that accountability looks like, we don't have it at the present time.
Caroline, perhaps you can talk a little bit about the direction that you think we have to go to get that conviction rate up and to begin to relieve women of this feeling that we can be raped with impunity.
As someone who thinks we should abolish the prison system, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I want to hold rapists accountable. There's no doubt about that. And Bill Cosby is unrepentant. He has been unrepentant the entire time in the face of overwhelming evidence. So, you know, standard kind of approaches to restorative justice perhaps wouldn't necessarily work in this situation, but we need the laws as they are right now to work for women, to work for rape survivors. And if we were to do, you know, a systemic kind of overhaul to make that work, we would need to interrogate the rules of evidence that work against survivors. We would need to interrogate the statutes of limitations that work against survivors, which oftentimes run, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. We abolished it in the state of California and a few other states because oftentimes survivors won't come forward for years because it's the only crime where you're put on trial, right? It's the only, you're stigmatized, you're blamed, you're shamed. The victim blaming is intense. We would also need juries who had a basic, you know, mandatory overview of rape myths so that they wouldn't just be drenched in rape myths when they come in to decide a case and then rape defense myths. Attorneys appeal to those rape myths. So there's a lot we could do right now to fix our system if we wanted to.
Tell us a little bit more about the atmosphere at that trial, what you were experiencing when you were speaking with and interacting with the survivors who testified at that trial.
Well, my purpose in being there, Fran, was to provide support in any way that I could for the survivors who were in the courtroom. And they faced a lot of, you know, harassment, possibly paid harassment. And I say that because it did appear that people were being compensated and kind of attacking them outside in very similar ways and shoving them and pushing them inside the courtroom. I mean, we had all sorts of very strange and illegal activities taking place during that trial that appeared to be organized and appeared to be about harassing the Cosby survivors. And when the verdict was read, I was sitting in between Lily Bernard, who's been waiting 25 years for justice, and Therese Sarangese, who is waiting 40 years for justice. And they physically just, their bodies gave out. We were removed from the courtroom because they were weeping so loudly, and I just had to pick both of them up and move them out of the courtroom because the judge asked them to leave because they couldn't, their release, they couldn't control their emotions because it was such a flood of emotions, finally hearing, you know, guilty, guilty, guilty.
Carolyn, do you want to say something to sum up about the direction we need to be going in as a society?
Well, I think we need to acknowledge that as much as we've made progress, liberal progress in terms of social, economic, and political positions, we still are highly devalued in our culture in ways that I think most girls and women don't like to talk about and recognize. I think the problem of patriarchy is much more persistent, intersectional, and deep than any of us would like to acknowledge, because that would mean acknowledging that we are truly indeed second-class citizens. But I think that acknowledgement is the first step in actually addressing patriarchy in our culture.
Dr. Caroline Heldman, thank you so much.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today, an analysis of Bill Cosby's prison release from the perspective of specialists who work with survivors of sexual abuse. We just listened to Professor Caroline Heldman speaking with Fran Luck of WBAI Radio in New York. And next, Maddie Tate Smith of the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault speaks with Ursula Rudenberg of KHOI Radio in Ames, Iowa.
My name is Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We provide resources and support to rape crisis centers, shelter programs, and then they work directly with survivors in all 99 counties across the state.
And I'm Ursula Rudenberg. The conversation that Maddie and I are going to have includes the topic of sexual abuse, should you prefer to turn away for your own personal reasons. Maddie contacted KHOI last Wednesday after Pennsylvania's highest court overturned the sexual assault conviction of actor and comedian Bill Cosby and released him from prison. Cosby was sentenced in 2018 to 3 to 10 years in a state prison for drugging and sexually assaulting one woman, with 59 other women also accusing him of sexual assault. Maddie contacted KHOI with a sense that it's an important moment to address consequences.
Yeah, we were shocked and frankly angry. This sends absolutely the wrong message to the courageous sexual assault survivors who came forward during the Cosby trial, but also just survivors in general. Today's decision really reflects the challenges that survivors of sexual assault face when they share their experiences through the criminal legal system. Just today, speaking of breaking news, the Boy Scouts of America announced an $850 million settlement with tens of thousands of survivors who brought a case against them. Looking at that, there's some accountability there that we don't see very often, but think about how long it took for that to occur. There have been allegations dating back as far as the 1960s, if not even sooner than that. And for it to have taken this long for survivors to get even some sort of monetary compensation, that seems terribly unfair when we think about the effects that sexual trauma has on victims of abuse. When people like Cosby are able to walk free, it really sends the message that sexual assault and its impact on victims isn't taken seriously. And so we just really want to remind survivors that the criminal legal system isn't the only way to find healing. Victim advocacy programs can help and support there to help heal.
You were saying that the effect of this event is not only to discourage people from trying to prosecute crimes, that it actually triggers memories of being sexually assaulted.
The ripple effect of something like this is that it's very triggering for survivors. So people hear this and then it might trigger a memory or an experience that they had with someone who caused harm. And that's what our victim service programs and our call helpline are for in that time of crisis.
The word triggering, it's a word that you hear a lot. What does that really mean?
Something that causes a person to relive some sort of trauma that they've experienced. Things in the news can trigger memories or post-traumatic stress with survivors.
Have you heard any responses to the Cosby release?
We do, yeah. Here in Iowa, our call helpline and a lot of our programs are receiving more calls right now.
So they see an increase in crisis calls?
Exactly. Frequently, we don't think about how the news cycle tends to re-traumatize survivors because it can be really hard. For anyone who's listening to this, feeling they need to reach out, you are not alone. Help is available.
There are two national organizations that can be contacted if you are looking for help. RAIN, or Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, can be found at rainn.org. That's rainn.org. RAIN has a hotline to call for help that is open 24 hours a day. The phone number is 800-656-HOPE. That's 800-656-4673. They also have a live chat available on the website, which again is rainn.org. Another association with information is NSVRC, or the National Sexual Violence Resource Center. NSVRC maintains a directory of organizations that lists state and territory sexual assault coalitions, victim survivor support organizations, and local communities of color sexual assault organizations. Information can be found at nsvrc.org. Again, that is nsvrc.org. So those are two national resources available to you if you don't know where to start to find help. Do you think that Cosby's case is important because he's such a household name?
Bill Cosby's conviction was the first high-profile conviction after the Me Too movement sort of exploded. And so he was the first high-profile perpetrator to really be held accountable through the criminal legal system. And to have that decision overturned a lot of survivors across the country who are sitting at home watching the news, listening to this news unfold, I mean, the message that this is sending really has a negative impact on whether or not survivors feel that they can come forward and that their case will be taken seriously by the criminal legal system. We see a lot of survivors who are fearful to come forward to talk about even what happened to them with victim advocates, much less pursue something through the criminal legal system, because they are afraid having relived that trauma and then to not have the person who caused harm be held accountable in some way. It just doesn't feel right. What we do and what we say around issues of sexual violence really matters. People are really looking at this as, okay, so what does this mean for the movement against sexual violence?
I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and we are hearing from Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, a statewide coalition to fight sexual assault. Maddie spoke with me when the news got out that Bill Cosby was released from a prison term he was serving after a sexual assault conviction. Do you think Cosby's case was about celebrity?
Bill Cosby has a lot of money, he has a lot of power, and he carries a lot of clout. I think anytime when dealing with powerful people, they have the means to keep pushing for appeals, whatever that they need to do. Being a celebrity allows you access to a lot of power and money that can be used to your advantage when you're a person who causes harm. And that goes back to the nature of sexual violence, right? The power and control dynamic and what that looks like.
It's interesting what you just said. You said that the dynamic of having that much power and money is similar to the dynamics within sexual assault. Did you really say that?
Yeah.
Can you say something about that?
When we look at the dynamics of sexual violence, assault, and abuse, there's a power and control dynamic where the person who causes harm creates a dynamic with the person that they're harming where they carry some sort of power over that person. So when we look at the tactics used with Bill Cosby, because of his celebrity, he was called America's dad for years. He can use that to his advantage. Look, I'm Bill Cosby. I have all this at my disposal. And there's that inherent power dynamic there that we see frequently with all kinds of cases of sexual violence. And it doesn't always necessarily have to be a person with money. There can be a similar dynamic at a McDonald's. If you have a shift supervisor who's sexually harassing you and this person's like, look, I'm the shift supervisor, I have more power.
The common factor is power.
Exactly.
It's a teachable moment, right?
Exactly. And then grooming tactics go into it also, creating a power imbalance so that if and when that person chooses to come forward, that the dynamic is such that that person won't have as much control of the situation. So it's about power and control, either real or perceived power. If a victim perceives another person as having power over them, that's just as significant as someone like Bill Cosby, who has a lot of notoriety and a lot of money.
What's the consequence to feeling that powerlessness?
Post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety. I've heard from survivors where it's difficult for them to even go grocery shopping without experiencing some sort of distress. It's lifelong. There was a CDC report that came out in 2017 that looked at the cost of sexual violence, and they estimated that the lifetime cost of rape in the United States is approximately $122,000 per victim. What they look at with that is not just the mental health costs, not just the medical costs, but also if a person loses their job or is unable to go to work, the cost on the economy, all those things. That's pretty staggering. I don't know about you. I do not have $122,000 just lying around in my bank account, right? We can believe survivors and support survivors, giving them that validation so that survivors aren't dismissed.
I've been speaking with Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Thank you for reaching out, Maddie.
Thank you, Ursula.
Again, the helpline for RAIN, or Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, is 800-656-HOPE, or 800-656-4673. And the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, NSVRC, provides a directory of organizations listing state and territory sexual assault coalitions and victim survivor support organizations. They can be found at nsvrc.org.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to an analysis on the release of Bill Cosby by specialists who work with survivors of sexual assault. Our contributors this week were Fran Luck with Joy of Resistance at WBAI Radio in New York, and Ursula Rudenberg with KHOI in Ames, Iowa. Thanks to featured guests, Dr. Caroline Heldman, Associate Professor of Politics at Occidental College and Advocate for Survivors of Sexual Assault, and Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Editing assistance by Stephanie Schubert. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio, thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Stephanie Schubert. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Today on Wings.
Making feminism visible in the media is the start of a committed, sometimes exhausting process that will shake up patriarchal mentalities and inequalities between men and women.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs.